Gun. Okay, this is Paul, and this is the last edition of Touchstones. Next week, the Wizard's flying solo with his new show, which is called Wisdom Soft Whisper. Is that right? We got
on that? Wisdom Soft Whisper.
And who is your guest going to be next week?
Elizabeth McDonald. She's the director of the AHON in Asheboro, which is a teaching body of the teachings of Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta Maharaj and self-inquiry.
You're not getting enough sound.
She has a book out, From the Heart, Elizabeth will be spending the noon hour with us next week, so looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. And our guest today is an old acquaintance of mine who I just keep stumbling over each other as we make our merry way through the various underworld of, or I guess it's not underworld, probably isn't quite the right word for it, the metaphysical underworld of the Triangle, and Ann Loomis, who is a writing consultant, and she actually was a guest on our show about a year ago, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
And Ann, you're doing something this Sunday that you want to tell people about, right?
Yes, I would like to invite the listening audience to a salon. It's a free salon. It's sponsored by the C.G. Jung Society of the Triangle, and it's to be held on Sunday, February 15th, from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Chapel Hill Public Library. And the topic is Mother, Daughter, Holy Soul, A Trinity for Our Time. It's a free, interactive salon, and it will explore Sophia more deeply than I have time to do today. But what I'm hoping is that today's talk will inspire the listening audience to come to that.
Yeah, and I've been to other of Anne's talks, and she's quite learned and also very approachable, and I'm sure it'll be a vibrant discussion. So, you want to speak about the feminine, the divine feminine, huh? Instead of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, it's Mother, Daughter, and Holy Soul.
Yes,
huh?
And today I'm going to talk about Sophia.
Mm-hmm. And who is Sophia?
Well, I'd like to start first with a visualization or a meditation that we come out of our heads and into our hearts. And so I invite everybody who's listening to participate in this. So, of course, take a deep breath and get into a silent space. And visualize a piece of coal or charcoal glowing in your heart center. Every time you take a breath, you are fanning the flame of this glowing ember. Sophia kindles the fire of the soul in the heart. Now, some of you might know that Sophia is the Greek word for wisdom, but this is not an intellectual or abstract wisdom. It's an esoteric or hidden wisdom, sometimes veiled wisdom. Sophia is an archetype. And for those of you who might not be familiar with the word archetype, arche means source. Type is an expression or pattern from that source. Archetypes dwell in the collective unconscious, a deep realm of the psyche that breaks through in certain periods of history, certain times in history. It seems to be now. Sophia is breaking through in our time to restore balance in our psyches, that is, our souls, and in our culture. And Carl Jung talks about the feminine principle as more connected to life and the soul and to earth and creation. And birthing, of course, is the feminine that births. So the feminine principle, or the feminine, it's the feminine psyche, really, that is birthing Sophianic consciousness in our time and pushing us to evolve in a new direction. So that's just some background words on Sophia. Maybe I should mention, too, the Sophia Foundation of North America. And I have a brochure here that says, "In the beginning was Sophia, Divine Sophia, Holy Wisdom for our time." There's a nice quote on the beginning. "When the world was born, I came into being. I am the unfading beauty of times to come. In me, grace is at work to divinize the soul. I shall continue to disclose myself to you. I am the eternal feminine." And that's a quote by Teilhard de Chardin.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I think that sets the tone for the talk today.
So Sophia is what would you say? A feeling, a practical feeling, a sense of wholeness for the world, what's concretely here?
Yes, I'd say a being. Yes, a being that comes to us in the silence and in the whispers of our heart and impulses to work with nature and to honor the cycles of the season and to develop a practical spiritual practice. And maybe I should mention one of mine because I have found it so rewarding. I am, by heritage on my father's side, Celtic. And it's interesting that the wizard mentioned that his next guest would be Elizabeth McDonald, right?
Yes.
Because my maiden name is was Bowie, B-U-I-E, which is a subset of the McDonald clan. So she and I are on the same wavelength here. So I grew up in Scotland County, North Carolina, which is about 2 hours southeast of here on the way to the coast. And it's a very Celtic feeling. So you mentioned feeling. It's a very mm-hmm. Celtic, has a Celtic feeling. It's the Lumbee River runs through that area where I grew up. And cypress trees, dark water, snakes, stumps. It's very much of the what I would call the root chakra.
You do know that in this area, the Moravian Church was one of the groups that the Moravians in their particular church pioneered in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And we may not know because they covered it up a little bit, but the Moravians were part of the Pietistic movement, and part of the Pietistic movement had a particular veneration for Sophia.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So there's a very strong Sophia current in American history, which is particularly uh-huh. live around here.
Uh-huh.
In fact, in Old Salem,
you
ever visit there?
I did because my great aunt was a teacher of economics at Salem College for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she lived in Old Salem, right across from the tavern. And so when I was in college at UNC Greensboro, I would visit Aunt Eve.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good name.
Yeah, exactly.
And she was Moravian.
Mm-hmm.
So I,
So you actually have the Sophia in your bloodline, just even in terms of that, with the Moravian connection.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
I wanted to say a little bit more about my practice with the Celtic
mm-hmm.
tradition. And honoring the seasons, which Rudolf Steiner highly recommended as a way of connecting to the earth, the soul of the earth. And what I do is use the Celtic wheel of the year as a mandala. Jung would call it a mandala, which is wholeness of, it's kind of a visual of a, it's a circle that's a visual of the wholeness of the soul. And we, about a week ago, was the celebration of Imbolc, which in the Celtic tradition is means ewe's milk, E-W-E, mm-hmm. ewe's milk. And it was the time that the earth was dormant, but getting ready, making ready for its greenness,
yeah.
to spring to life. And so a week ago on February 2nd was the Celtic cross-quarter day of Imbolc. And the Catholic tradition is Candlemas. When the churches light candles for St. Bridget. Of course, Bridget was a Celtic goddess. And that in the Catholic tradition is lighting a candle for the coming of the Christ, the Christ light. And what do we do in today's society? Well, February 2nd is Groundhog Day. That's the way we mark February 2nd. But that wonderful movie that came out with Bill Murray, if you all remember, yeah. Groundhog Day.
Right.
So another practice I do on February 2nd is to watch that movie. We have the DVD at home. And so we watch the movie Groundhog Day, and this is something my husband and I do, and we ask ourselves, you know, what do we do over and over and over again without awareness, as Bill Murray did in that film? And that repeats itself in a kind of a meaningless way until you, quote, aha, you get it. And then you can shift the patterns of your life in a new direction. The groundhog went underground after he saw his shadow to reflect on it. Yeah. And as Jung would say, that would be descent. Going underground is descent into the unconscious.
And Bill Murray was caught in eternal recurrence of the same.
He did.
Until he could be himself and thereby win the maid.
He won the fair maiden
it
that way.
It took a long time.
Well, he connected with his true self rather than his ego self, you could say, in Jungian parlance.
What's interesting is Bridget is also the other aspects that are celebrated in the pagan tradition for
right.
Bridget are the arts and the crafts.
Arts,
in particular.
Healing, smithcraft, poetry, right. Mm-hmm. And she kindles the light, too, that we're, go back to that ember in your heart. She kindles that ember.
And that's sort of, so one aspect of Sophia is practical, you could even say handicrafts. In other words,
yeah.
It's the way of integrating the way you make your world.
Right, exactly.
You
know, it's creating
the way you feather your nest.
Right, yeah. Making of life an art.
Yeah,
she's of creativity. Yes,
mm-hmm.
Sophia is an archetype of creativity. Absolutely.
And and so some of the things that we think least of, you know, that support us in our life, you know, like mm-hmm. the manure that. Yeah. Helps us have healthy crops and the,
right.
so forth and so on. All of those things, as it were, the secret of them is the Sophia.
That's a part
presence.
Of it. I would say that is, maybe that's the Black Madonna mm-hmm. aspect of Sophia.
Mm-hmm. And so what are some other aspects of Sophia?
Let me say a word about Carl Jung first. I think this will help us get into it. Because this is how, basically, I came to know Sophia. In my life is by studying Carl Jung and the archetypes. And Carl Jung says that we need to connect with our personal myth and actively work with it in the world. And this is how I came to the realization that part of my personal myth is the Celtic. And I started working then with the Celtic Wheel of the Year. But Jung, I would say, was Gnostic in the broadest sense of the word. In an interview, when someone asked if he believed in God, he replied, "I do not believe, I know." So he had this, Gnosticism is a direct experience of the divine. It's a deeper knowing through the deep layers of the self. And so he worked with Gnosticism to understand the unconscious, and this is a very Sophianic act, by the way. For 10 years, between 1916 and 1926, and he studied the Gnostic material. But this was before the Nag Hammadi finds in 1945. And so after those discoveries, he followed them more closely. In fact, this is something I didn't know, but one of the main manuscripts of the Nag Hammadi is now being called the Jung Codex.
You know what that one is? It's the Gospel of John.
Ah.
I mean, it's the Gospel of St. Thomas. It's the one that everybody quotes.
Right, yep.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was called that, though, the Jung Codex. Mm-hmm. The Gospel of St. Thomas.
And it was the first one translated of the Nag Hammadi, and it was translated in 1959.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, you know, decades before any of the other.
Right.
Well over, almost 25 years before the other ones were finally translated.
Mm-hmm. And one of the famous quotes from the Gospel of Thomas is, "If you do not bring forth what is within you, it will destroy you." If you bring forth what is within you, it will save you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But Jung believed that Sophia was more than an abstraction. And he believed that a devotion to Mary or Sophia helps unlock the treasury of the psychological depths. And for Jung, the process of individuation is the personal recognition of the indwelling spark of Sophia, which helps the individual to act in a self-aware manner, like Bill Murray came to act in the movie Groundhog Day. He finally came to act in a self-aware manner. So that movie, Groundhog Day, is really a very Sophianic film.
So, there are other aspects of Sophia.
Right, uh-huh. Yeah, I could talk about, maybe I should talk about the Black Madonna. You want me to talk about that aspect?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or do you know the classic Gnostic myth that goes with Prista Sophia, the famous... Gnostic story of Sophia. It's one that's actually, it makes sense with the Black Madonna because in this case, Sophia, who is the consort with the high god, exists, she ends up getting, there's various versions of it, but she ends up getting pregnant and has a stillborn child. Because he's a god, he isn't dead. And he becomes the demiurge.
Yeah.
He's the
mm-hmm.
Promethean character
right.
for this thing. And he's the one who creates Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one who's walking around there and telling them not to eat fruit on the trees and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one that the serpent is saying, hey, this guy isn't who he pretends to be.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't the all-creator God. He's mm-hmm. just a pretend God.
Mm-hmm.
You know? The real God doesn't come down here and tell you not to eat fruit from trees. You can do what you please.
Mm-hmm.
So as it goes, and in the Gnostic myth, this is also the sort of grouchy God who was telling the Hebrews to kill, slaughter people and uh-huh. knock down walls and do all those nasty things. You know, the God that we would rather not be God mm-hmm. is this demiurge God. Demiurge, by the way, means somebody. He's a maker. He's a maker,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting when you think about Sophia. The thing about Sophia is that she's somewhat distraught. Her child is running amok this
yeah.
way. Messing with creation.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up.
Yeah.
I believe Jung said that the demiurge was the ego.
Mm-hmm.
And the ego deceives. And the ego falsifies. And the ego thinks that it's all-powerful.
That sounds like my ego, all right. Yes, I think so.
So any of us can relate to that. It's not an abstraction, is it?
Nope.
Yeah. So, but I would like to say a few words about the Black Madonna, because
sure.
that's a very important aspect of Sophia in our times, as we're striving to connect to the soil, to the earth. You know, the word humus, H-U-M-U-S, humus, and humus, and that
humility.
Also humility and humor,
and
human, all come from the same root. This is earth and body wisdom, this Black Madonna. As I mentioned, it's the root chakra that many of us don't descend to. We're in our heads, we're in our throats, or we're
mm-hmm.
above that, and don't honor the root chakra as much. But the Black Madonna is the instinctive pole of the archetype of Sophia. And in the Bible, she maybe is represented by Shulamite, the Shulamite in the Solomon's Song of Songs.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the secret dark power that connects body and soul rather than splitting or fragmenting body and soul. So she represents matter, the earth, the body, the unconscious parts of our psyche that we need to gather together. One of Sophia's mm-hmm. roles is to gather the scattered parts of ourselves to bring them into wholeness.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell a story. It doesn't relate directly to Sophia, but it does relate to my history.
Okay.
Personal history with the Divine Feminine. Back in the early 1970s, mm-hmm. I'm an anthropologist studying the new religions, and I'm pretty well integrated with the old line metaphysical, the bookstore metaphysical group. And I knew a lot of these people, all of whom were well over 50 or 60. So I was getting a lot of tutelage from elders, men and women, mm-hmm. who had been involved in the occult when they were. But they were, they were much older than me, by usually between 30 and 40 years older than I was.
Mm-hmm.
And but I thought I got a lot of interesting stories. Well, one of the things I discovered when I was doing my research was that there was this thing emerging. In fact, the first way that I became aware of it was I was keeping this library open, this metaphysical library open, and these women would come in. These women were obviously lesbians. I mean, they were in the uniform. They were really, and they were reading. They wanted to read the metaphysical stuff, but they only wanted to read women. Mm-hmm. They didn't like Madame Blavatsky. They didn't think she was feminine enough. So, mm-hmm. But they were reading Alice Bailey and some of these other old style metaphysicians. And so I finally managed to get one who would talk to me, which was not easy. And I said, "What's going on?" And I said, "Well, we're with this." We're this witch's covenant. We're developing, a feminist view of God, I said, "Oh, that sounds fascinating, But he says, "It's only women, Well, somewhat. So that sort of shut it down for a little while. About a year later, a friend of mine came by who said, "Well, there are actually covens around. This is, that have men in them." I said, I want to get introduced to one. So it took a few more months, and eventually, I got an invitation to join a coven and go through the training, which I did. What happened is that all my old metaphysical friends, these people, said, "Oh, Paul, why are you doing this? This is so silly. Everybody knows that, God isn't gendered, God is not, God doesn't have a sex, everything in heaven is sexless, I said, "No, in order why I want to stay alive, But the, so what happened is, so I went through the training. I went through the training for almost 2 years of active training with Wicca, and then I got sidetracked with some other aspects. 7 years later, after doing this, but the reason I was attracted to Wicca was when I first heard this idea of God as divine, it felt strange to me. And this is maybe hard to, it needs to be put in the context of early 70s, 1970s, because the ideas become more current in the last 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, it's not only that, but so there must be something there." It was sort of like my unconscious. There must be something there that I need to learn. Well, I went through the training and did all of the stuff and went off and did other things. And 7 years after my initiation, I had, and I won't go into the context of it at this point, had a vision of the goddess, which was a profound, spontaneous vision of this, of the threefold goddess. Mm-hmm. What was is that she was shimmering simultaneously in the threefold goddess's maiden, mother, and
yeah.
crone.
Mm-hmm.
So a woman in her classic seasons. And the maiden, she was a young girl, poised, sort of arrogant and curious, right? At the mother, she was like pregnant, mm-hmm. like bursting ready to have a child that instant, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the crone, she was, you know, withered but wise, mm-hmm. and in having a depth of insight and so forth. But what was interesting about the vision is that she was these three things simultaneously, mm-hmm. as I said, in a way the vision is interesting because, yes, I saw this as a sort of waking dream, but she was shimmering it, like I said, like a candle flame.
Wow.
So she was in phase with all three of them, mm. in a kind of simultaneous rotating way. Mm-hmm. The other thing that was interesting about remembering the vision was that it was somatic. It was always a somatic vision, mm-hmm. in the sense that it was always almost like an embodied sense. And when I remembered it, I wasn't remembering some interesting dream that happened. Mm-hmm. I was forced into this presence, and
right.
even after the vision was over, years later, or when I talk about it now, mm-hmm. Remembering it is evoking it, evokes uh-huh. its presence. Mm-hmm. So what was interesting is, and as I thought, I was the Jew, it took 7 years mm-hmm. for this, the reality of some aspect of Sophia, and I've actually had visions after that, not too many, but about the goddess, different phases of her mm-hmm. nature. But the thing was is that it took a long time for me to, even though I did the groundwork,
right.
I had to go for, you know, about 5 fallow years, as it were, before it actually mm-hmm. took root to, mm-hmm. to get a deep sense of what... Yes. Of what Sophia means, and that's some sense she is Sophia. She is this presence of
the
divine.
She was all in one. She's the wholeness of the goddess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the alchemy of the body and matter.
Yeah.
Because you said it was somatic for you. So
yeah.
You felt it was visceral.
Of course, I also felt as completely overwhelmed when I saw her. And I thought, well, this isn't real. This isn't doing my psyche, my little male fragile psyche, any good, you know. So mm-hmm. I said, so I immediately invoked the horn god.
Uh-huh.
Yes. But that's another start of this. That's another vision. Yeah, that's another program.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because that's the way you came to Sophia, is
right.
through your study of Wicca.
Through Wicca, yeah.
But it evoked that mm-hmm. image. And so... we talked about earlier, you know, what is Sophia birthing?
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things she's birthing is a new level of consciousness that could be called integrative. And previous levels of consciousness, you know this, I'm sure, is, archaic consciousness, for one. And that's more of the Aboriginal people and the indigenous people who telepathically connected with Mother Earth, and so that would be called maybe the archaic.
That's where the ego hasn't fully hasn't got hard boiled yet.
That's
is that
right.
it?
Yeah, and so another level, which is what you were working with, is the magical, mm-hmm. the magical level of consciousness, and that would be like paganism or Wicca, and maybe the Harry Potter books have been instrumental in bringing our attention back to this level of consciousness. Because as I mentioned, Sophia is integrative, so she's mm-hmm. integrating the archaic level. And the movie Australia, which recently came out, talks about this level, you know, that winsome boy who sings with mm-hmm. the earth. And when he is separated from people that he loves, he has that soul connection and he can sing the soul back to him.
Right.
And so that's more of the archaic level. And then that magical level in Wicca, and then the Harry Potter books are bringing our attention to. And then the third level would be a mythical level of consciousness, as in the creation and the flood mm-hmm. stories. You know, you mentioned Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden and the
right.
flood stories. There are many biblical stories that are mythical. And maybe Lord of the Rings, too, would be mm-hmm. an example of a popular mythological. Fairy tales, I think, probably bring in several layers, archaic as well as magical and mythical. And then a fourth level, which I think is how we're out of balance today, the fourth level of consciousness would be mental, rational, scientific consciousness. It's very associated with the masculine principle, and I think it's how we're out of balance.
Mm-hmm. So let me finish
the levels. And so what Sophia does is she's kind of a spiraling consciousness. So she brings us down into the archaic levels and the magical and the mythical, and but also she helps us to really reflect in a mental, rational, analytical way about.
So what does she bring to the rational? How do you see that?
What does she bring to the rational? Yeah. Well, what do you think she brings to the rational?
I could go on for hours, but that's not the point.
We're doing a little bit of it here. I think we are two rational people talking to each other about Sophia.
That's debatable, but okay.
Yeah. Sometimes rational.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But I think we can step back and be objective rather than be caught up in a sympathetic magic, as the pagans would call it,
but with
nature. We can step back and have our own ego as we dialogue.
And that's the masculine consciousness.
That's the masculine contribution. Right.
But I think then what she does is she reconnects us to, you know, to honor these sources that we disconnected from.
Well, she would say, I'm not really connecting you. I'm just bringing your awareness back to your original connection.
Right.
So it's not so much a re.
So you're not really disconnected.
You're not.
Just,
it's an illusion.
it's an illusion.
Yeah. Yeah. We never have been separated, but our ego tells us we are. So.
Because it wants to exist,
right.
And that's why it keeps telling you. It's why it keeps going on and talking incessantly.
But I think our task today, as Jung would say, is to realize that ego-self axis. We're not to, I think, get rid of our egos so much as to have a connection between the ego and the deeper layers of the self so that we're individuals. This is the path of individuation.
So I noticed one of the people that is very simpatico to Sophia is Thomas Berry.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, the other
Absolutely.
Issue with Thomas Berry is that he's also very oriented towards, ecology, the way we are naturally integrated in the world. And I think that's obviously one aspect of Sophia.
Yes, and I'd like to say something about another organization here in Chapel Hill, the Ecozoic Society.
Mm-hmm.
ECOZOIC. It means House of Life.
Uh-huh.
And it is based on Thomas Berry
mm-hmm.
and his philosophy and his deep, deep connection with the spirituality of the earth
right.
and his philosophy of the earth is sacred,
right.
and respect for all beings.
But let's say that somebody's listening to us as a Christian, and they're saying, "Well, who is this Sophia? You mentioned Mary a few times,
okay.
but we're talking about the divine feminine. But you know, as far as I know, it ain't Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and Sophia.
Mm-hmm.
How does she fit in?
Good question. All right. Well, maybe I'll start with the end.
Yeah.
The last book of the Bible is the book of Revelation. And revelation means unveiling. And so what is happening in our time is that Sophia is unveiling herself.
Sophia's a stripper?
Okay. She's unveiling the hidden wisdom of the esoteric.
Okay, right,
esoteric. Okay. The exoteric church doesn't talk so much about her. But the esoteric Christianity does. So in that book of Revelation, there's this wonderful image. And if you went to the Nasher Museum exhibit on El Greco, there was this beautiful portrait of this image of the woman clothed with the sun, standing on the moon with the 12 stars over her head, and she is with child.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that image is from the book of Revelation. So, clothed with the sun, she bounds the solar system. Standing on the moon, She has put the sublunary and illusory realm under her feet. Over her head is the crown of the zodiac, 12 stars of the zodiac, mm-hmm. and she is with child. So she's birthing. She's birthing. She's pregnant.
Right.
With, I would say, that new consciousness of the marriage of heaven and earth. So also in the Bible is that metaphor, a new heaven and a new earth. And I think that's also in the book of Revelation. And that is a metaphor for the coming together of divine, the divine in matter, a connection of heaven and earth, spirit and matter.
So in some ways, the Sophias is our awakening to, or aspect of Sophias, our awakening to respecting the living world as it is.
Mm-hmm. And it's more than that. And I can get into alchemy here, but let me just say something else mm-hmm. about the Bible. I've taken a few courses on St. Paul, and I've had mixed feelings
to
say the
least.
I don't know, maybe that's another program. But what I guess I came to appreciate in some of these classes is St. Paul's Sophianic side.
mm-hmm.
For example, in Romans 8:23, he writes, "We know that the whole creation is groaning in travail together until now, and not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan loudly as we wait for adoption as children, the redemption of our bodies." And so I think there he is talking about Sophianic work, which is mm-hmm. work with the elements, for example, air and fire,
right.
and water and earth, for redemption, I guess, would be his word.
Yeah.
So I did come to a new appreciation after having many, many years as not wanting to read anything that he wrote. I grew up Presbyterian, so I guess you can maybe understand.
So is Presbyterians particularly suspicious of Pauline Christianity?
Oh, no. Presbyterians are big in Pauline Christianity.
Oh, yes,
but
okay,
as a female,
uh-huh.
I didn't particularly like hearing the stories about wives submitting to their husbands. And, let me go on.
And
women should keep silent in the church and all that. But I think I belong to a very progressive church, the Church of Reconciliation on Elliott Street.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I've been taking some classes on Paul and have come to a new understanding of his, as I say, Sophianic side. So that's been a growing edge for me, I think.
Yeah. Like Paul gets blamed for all sorts of things. Maybe wouldn't have Christianity today
exactly.
if it weren't for Paul.
Oh, yeah. I think that's right.
Yeah,
I mean,
he held particularly the resurrected Christ.
Yeah.
You know, and he was sort of an upstart, having not known the man Jesus that was clumping around Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
So, John, you got any reflections you'd like to pipe in here about Sophia?
Well, in the in the East, they see the female principle as all form, as everything.
Mm-hmm.
What is that which moves?
Yes.
They call it Shakti.
Yes, Shakti and Shiva, the male.
Well, Shiva is solid nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So Shiva has the power of infinite capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And within that capacity, consciousness plays.
Mm-hmm.
So that within which the female principle manifests would be the male principle,
mm-hmm.
solid nothing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it doesn't move.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. In stillness.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Shiva, because he's infinite capacity, never exists. the only way that Shiva exists is through Shakti.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
So everything that is, if it is Shakti.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the, I guess that's a good way of sort of saying, well, I'm not responsible.
Muktananda called it the play of consciousness.
Yeah.
It's all the play of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that is the female aspect, and it's and the part of the female aspect is to veil.
Yeah.
And then if one surrenders to the veiling, then the unveiling.
Yeah.
It's the mother that puts you into the heart of the father by surrender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the unveiling is another veiling, and it's always playful.
Yeah, playful, creative,
yeah.
Imaginative.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Ritual is an important part of the play, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Arts.
So what do you think? For instance, you're going to be giving this talk at the Sunday at the Chapel Hill Library after between 2 and 4, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's free, and you can go and engage.
Mm-hmm.
And about the nature of Sophia. Well, why? So what's the point? Why should we know about Sophia?
Well, I think that it's as I say, it's time for her. It's her time because there's an imbalance with the masculine principle.
An imbalance is global warming and
that's of course
the meltdown of the financial system.
Meltdown of the
we got a lot of imbalances out there.
We've got so many imbalances. Well, how can we name them all?
Yeah, right.
What's wrong with the masculine?
Yeah. What, I'm not responsible? Did I just say I don't really exist?
It's fine. It's the masculine is fine, but it's out of balance right now. And so Sophia is the bride, the bride of God in this particular system, I guess you would call it. But anyway,
the bride makes the groom accountable.
Back to the Trinity and what I'm going to do on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
Where if you look at the masculine Trinity, there's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Right.
Okay, well, you know, some people have said, well, maybe the Holy Spirit is feminine. And maybe if you go back to the root of it, well, let me continue.
Yeah.
If you go back to the root of it, the Holy Spirit was in the Hebrew tradition. Rauh, that word, R-A-U.
Yeah, R-A-U-H, yeah.
Yeah, and it was breath, you know, the breath, the breathing forth of God. Well, then what happened is that it took on, in Greek, it took on the neuter word, pneuma. That's that's a neutral word, that's neuter. And then in Latin, it became spiritus, which is masculine. So the whole thing became masculinized, which is, again, it's an imbalance. So Rudolf Steiner... his idea or concept or vision was that maybe not to have the feminine hanging on as the Holy Spirit, or as Jung said, he actually advocated a quaternity, and Mary was to bring Mary in as the fourth, not have a trinity, but to have a quaternity, and to bring Mary in. But so Rudolf Steiner said, well, maybe a feminine trinity would be a complement or a mirror. And so that's what I'm going to be working with. And so that would be mother, as in the heart of the earth.
Right.
And daughter, as Sophia, who can go into the heart of the earth, as well as into the starry realms of the zodiac. And holy soul is community, or as love that manifests in community.
In community. In other words, people getting along with each other.
It's actually a group of people who, with Sophianic consciousness, is what I would say.
Who are we?
And so you'll have to come on Sunday and we can talk about that. But I would say that you are part of the, I just met you today, but I would just listening to you, I would say we here in this room are part of the Sophianic community, bringing wisdom and balance. to our psyches, to our
everything.
Souls. And everything, yeah. Everything, yeah. It's the all, the wholeness.
Everything.
And it's and also, I haven't said a lot about alchemy, and we probably don't have enough time for me to get into it. But
only 15 minutes.
Oh,
and we did start later. We could go
alchemy.
a little longer.
Okay, well, alchemy is always works with the feminine principle because that's the prima materia.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's of the earth and of the unconscious. So I could say nature with a little n and nature with a big n. Nature as an earth, as we know nature, and our inner natures of the deep levels of the unconscious. So the goal of alchemy is to make light shine in darkness, or to draw light from darkness, and that's the initiation of alchemy. And so what Sophia does is provide the four vehicles of the alchemical process, and that would be the elements.
Mm-hmm.
So in alchemy, begins with the prima materia, and so it corresponds to finding the basic common denominator of matter.
And that's everything. That's all all the elements.
Right.
It's the thing that they all have in common.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are the common denominator, and you could say maybe it's the fifth, which is ether.
It's a quintessence or whatever. Yeah.
Quintessence, right? Mm. So this recognition of finding the common denominator is the first step in reconnecting the.
Some people say that was space. I mean, that's what ether is. It's kind of a push and pull space.
Or spirit, some people say spirit.
The substratum within which, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so...
And what is this substratum? What is this?
Be consciousness, too.
Mm-hmm. Is that consciousness?
Yeah, from the deeper levels of consciousness. Uh-huh. Yeah. Finding our own substratum.
And what gender is that?
It's always feminine.
That's feminine.
Yeah. But let me just say a little bit more about the alchemical work, because it's so important to Sophia's work. The three major stages are, number one is the negredo, which is the blackening, and I've talked about the Black Madonna.
That's when you take some wood and turn it into charcoal.
Right. Well, no, that's actually later. But that's the wood itself, maybe, or the charcoal itself.
Okay.
And then albedo is the second stage. That's whitening, and that's kind of the struggle to bring light to it.
That's when you burn the charcoal towards ash.
And that's then rubedo is the reddening. Uh-huh. All right. So black is the negredo. You could say that Sophia falls into matter, so she falls into earth and water. Okay, you could say that.
Mm-hmm.
It's all metaphorical, but it's an analogy. But and then you could say that in the albedo or the whitening, she's struggling to return, and that's typified by air. And she becomes like the wind. And in the rubedo, Sophia is established in fire. And that's that inner fire, like the glowing coal in the heart center did the meditation.
And you know, sometimes, and this is called the Red Queen and the White Queen.
Yes, and the Red Queen is the rubedo, and the White Queen is that struggling with the mind to bring it all together into that's air, which is the middle realm. But what alchemy is the process that reverses the fall from grace. It's the soul's return journey, really. Just in a nutshell.
So the soul is returning from where to what?
All right. The soul, falls into experience.
Where did it come from in the first place?
All right. The soul in the first place was one right. with the divine.
Okay.
And then the soul falls into matter, which means experience, really.
And forgets itself.
And so we fall into time, and we have experience. But we're have some amnesia because along with that, and so we forget our connection.
If we remembered the divine, we wouldn't have fallen into matter. Right.
That's right. So Sophia, I guess in the Gnostic tradition, Sophia agrees to fall from that Ein Sof, that original oneness, So she agrees to fall with humanity into experience, and she accompanies humanity through all experience, and then as the albedo, the whitening begins, we begin, enlightenment. We can say, aha, well, that's what that experience was about, and we have some kind of reflection on it. We can make meaning mm-hmm. from that. And that's work of Sophia.
So what do you call enlightenment? What does that mean?
Well, enlightenment is, all kinds of words, I guess, I could put with enlightenment. It's another level of consciousness, and it's seeing a place for the first time. For example, when I go back to Scotland County, I can look at my experiences from childhood in that area where I grew up and realize now that was Sophia all along, connecting me to my roots. And
you mean you discovered that you knew Sophia even before you could give her a name?
Even before I could give her a name, she was there in the mm-hmm. beginning. That's exactly right. Yeah, always. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we need to tell people that we are on at the top of the hour. We always do this. This is WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill. You're listening to your community radio station. We are all 100% completely and totally volunteer staffed and sponsored and moving forward to. Nobody at this radio station can earn their living from it. We'll put it that way, real simple. So the reason we do these shows is for the love of our community, which is part of our Sophia consciousness, mm-hmm. Seeping out through the airwaves. So you are listening to 103.5, which is the FM way of tuning us in. And we are particularly interested in focusing on the community of Chapel Hill and Carrboro, and bringing you aspects of the cultural life that we have here that you might not otherwise hear or know about. Now, this Sunday at the library, and Loomis is going to be there telling you more about Sophia and exploring that idea. And I could also see that, you know, when you were describing the alchemical work, mm-hmm. and I could also see how you probably translate that into your real profession, the one that you actually make mm-hmm. A living at, mm-hmm. which is writing consultant.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you work with writers and have yeah. them, what, rewrite? That's what I've always
yeah.
said.
Yeah, that's kind of a shamanistic tool, really, to help writers go into the unconscious through mm-hmm. through writing. And I journal every morning. It's part of my practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So instead of talking to a psychotherapist every day, you journal.
So they have shawomen, too?
Those are called shamanka, I think.
Shamanka. Yeah, the shaman is not I think it's sort of like omnibudsman. This doesn't mean. I mean, when they were getting, you know, to the point where they wanted to degenderize all the things, there's omnibuds person. You know,
doesn't sound
exist.
Quite right.
Yeah, not right. You know, Shay person. I'm a Shay person.
Shamanica.
Oh, yeah. Shamanica sounds actually kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So you've been listening to Touchstones. The Wizard Baldur is going to be here with his sidekick Trip Overholt, who's been handling the panel. And so I guess what we'll do is we will sign off. And thank you so much, Anne, for being here today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, Wizard Baldur. He'll be here. I will be listening from afar. I might even call in to bug you
that's all
tomorrow. So, and it's time to let the music begin. So we'll go to our regular programming.